My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Coming up on Heard on the Street, Snap goes public. Will other tech companies follow its lead? And why Costco and Target are this week's retail haves and have-nots.
Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello and welcome to Heard on the Street, the podcast. We are the Wall Street Journal's home for commentary on all things financial all over the world. Reporting from New York, I'm Miriam Gottfried, joined today by my colleague Alex Frangos in London. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Miriam.
And by my colleague Steve Russolillo here in New York. Good to have you both.
Thanks for having us.
So in our second segment, Steve will help us understand why fortunes have diverged for Costco and Target, which both report earnings this week. But first, we have Dan Gallagher on the line from San Francisco to talk to us about the IPO we have all been waiting for from Snapchat owner Snap. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going all right. It's an exciting morning. So, Dan, Snap priced last night at $17 a share, which valued it at $24 billion. And that was above the high end of the $14 to $16 range that Snap had put out there. And there was also reportedly huge demand for the shares. And when we left our desks to come up here to record this podcast, the shares were indicated to open at $22 to $24 a share, so a significant premium. Would you call this a successful IPO?
Yeah, I mean, in the sense that, you know, people get fixated on, you know, the so-called pop, which is, you know, how the stock treats the IPO price. And, you know, I don't think there's any surprise for a few reasons, because one, you know, there's been really no big tech IPOs for quite a while. So the market's been dry, a lot of pent up demand. And because this is such a well-known name. When I did some looking last month and checked out the data, most tech IPOs get a pop. You know, they go up from the IPO price. Of course, that doesn't matter for most investors, because most investors have to come in after the open price, and at that point, it's a lot more of a coin toss.
Well, I think it's interesting when you look at, you know, the IPO we watched very closely when I was in Asia was Alibaba, and that was just this epic, you know, hype and news event. The shares didn't trade for like 3 hours the morning it opened. So the IPO price was 68. It traded, the first trade was 92. Everyone thought that this thing was just going to go into the roof, go into the sky. And here we are 2 years later, and it's up about 10% from there. So hardly.
At least it's up.
At least it's up for most of the last 2 years. It hasn't been.
I mean,
up,
take
above
a look
that.
At Twitter for a counterexample.
Twitter and even Facebook, you know, which is a great stock now, but for more than a year, that was dead money.
Yeah.
Compared to the IPO. And part of that was because they kind of ran the IPO itself a little badly. And also the company, I think some maturity in how they worked with investors and, you know, another young CEO who's kind of feeling his way. And I think with after about a year when it showed that they get serious about running an actual business and producing returns, and the returns were really good, is when that stock really started to take off. And we're nowhere near seeing that with Snapchat yet.
Here we have another young CEO who obviously, you know, I mean, maybe not obviously, but based on the way this deal was structured, he doesn't really seem to care all that much about investors. I mean, not giving investors any vote is probably the first sign of that.
Yeah, and again, he's trying to follow the pattern that we've seen with some other, you know, Silicon Valley tech companies, which hasn't been fatal to companies like Google and Facebook, obviously. But I think the mistake some of these young guys make is to project a complete nonchalance about, you know, how the earnings go and how the stock behaves, because they really need it to do well. I mean, they rely on the stock for a big part of their compensation, for luring talent, and also to make acquisitions. So if they ignore, it's one thing to say, hey, we don't manage to, like, just keep the, you know, juice the stock price and manage for the quarter. But if you go too far away from the showing investors you care about the returns, then it does hurt your company and hurts your prospects and your ability to lure talent. So I think they'll have to adjust to that. We'll see if they actually do.
But what is the bull case here? I mean, what, you know, I think back when Google IPO'd back in, you know, was it 2004, and I was, you know, at the time, I loved Google, but I was very skeptical, and, you know, it's up like, you know, 1700% or whatever, and it was, you know, the average person on the street couldn't imagine, you know, what some very bullish people could imagine. So what are the bulls imagining for Snapchat?
I think what drives a lot of these social network IPOs is the thought that, you know, they're going to be a significant force, global force, for people to communicate. So Facebook's turned into that. You know, you got about a quarter of the world's population now using Facebook at least once a month, which is phenomenal, and they're still growing a good amount on top of that. With Twitter, I think the big disappointment is that they've shown they're not really, I don't think they're going to reach that kind of thing, because I think Twitter's more of a service that's useful for a certain type of person, not as universally useful. So I think the reason the stock has languished is because it still remains kind of priced on this thought that they'll have a huge part of the world's population, rather than readjusting the view that, hey, we can make a profitable service on this kind of niche we have. They're not acting like they want to do that yet. So I think that's why
Where is Snapchat going to go for the rest of the world? Because I, you know, in Asia, that space is filled by companies like Line and Snow, and in China by WeChat and others, and you know, a whole panoply of you know, photo manipulating messaging, social networking apps. So, well, where does Snap go?
Alex, in its IPO filing, Snap actually says basically that it's going to continue to focus on the markets where ad spending is the biggest, which, you know, namely the U.S. That's the biggest market that they're going to continue to focus on trying to expand their user base. So actually, their ambitions are not really to be as global as these other companies, but rather to really maximize their user base and the revenue they get from their user base in the biggest advertising markets. And so that's why they're asking investors to focus on average revenue per user in the various regions, as opposed to focusing on, like, global, you know, share of advertising.
Was that setting their horizons too short?
And I think the funny thing, though, is that we don't even yet know that. No, I mean, the problem with Snapchat going public with such a young operating history is that we really even haven't had the time to decide, is this a fad for a couple of years that goes away like MySpace did? I mean, there was a time MySpace was the place to be. Or does this thing have lasting power? I still think that's the big question hanging over Snapchat that nobody really knows for sure.
Well, let me ask you guys, do any of you guys snap on a regular basis?
No.
No for Dan. Alex?
No.
No, Miriam?
I don't on a regular basis. I do have an account, and you know, I know I've have some familiarity with how the app works, but I don't snap on a regular basis. My friends don't really do it.
Yeah. Well, I definitely follow the Wall Street Journal's Snap account, channel, whatever it's called.
The Discover.
Yeah. Well,
you're a good worker.
I got to tell you, though, I do it fairly regularly. I'm certainly not a Snapchat expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's a pretty fascinating service. I think that, you know, a lot of my friends are on it, and it's a new way that we all communicate that we just weren't doing a few years ago. That said, though, I mean, we're getting indications that this stock could open at, you know, $24 a share, which would be a more than 40% premium from the pricing from last night, which would put it at more than 20 times forward earnings, which is just a crazy, crazy multiple. So, I mean, to me, when I look at this, and I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on this, but this is a service that's interesting, it's cool, it's pretty fascinating, but, like, it's crazy super expensive. Oh my God. And I understand that there's a real clamoring for tech IPOs right now. We haven't seen a big offering like this since Alibaba, as you mentioned. So clearly there is pent-up demand for a big issue like this. But, oh my God, it is expensive.
I agree with that. I think Snap is worth something. I think it can be a good business. I think it, you know, can take a meaningful chunk of advertising revenue and can continue to grow. I mean, I don't know whether it can control its expenses and become profitable, but I think it definitely has great potential. Is that worth, you know, $20 to $30 billion? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I don't think it will be ever, personally. But I don't, maybe I'm being too skeptical.
Well, and the Twitter example is fascinating because, you know, from Snap's perspective, they certainly want to be viewed as the next Facebook and not the next Twitter. But if you just look at how Twitter traded, I mean, up 73% on its, that was its first day pop, which was
crazy.
At the time was just a mind-blowing rally. But now, if you look at it now, 3 years later, it's down by more than two-thirds from what it was when it originally priced. So it's, you know, it's the first day pop, as Dan has written, is certainly not indicative of what's to come for a company.
Yeah, and I think with Snapchat, it's, you know, I think a lot of these companies have potential to be profitable businesses, even if they're not being used by the entire world. So Twitter hasn't proven that yet. If Snapchat gets to the point where they prove that, you know, it could be worth, I don't know. I mean, tech IPOs normally go out the door with huge expectations that have to moderate. Even the solid ones have to deal with that. So I think in a few years, I think it'll take, you know, it'll be interesting to see where Snap is a year from now, you know, how their financial performance has gone and versus how the stock has gone. But like I said, I still think the main question is that these guys are so young, not just the founders, but the business itself, that, you know, there still needs to answer that question of what is the, can this last past this kind of period of it being a fad, is still unanswered.
We are going to have to take a break. Coming up, Costco and Target, a tale of two retailers.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Paul Gigot, host of the Potomac Watch podcast. Join me and my colleagues every week as we dissect all of the latest happenings in Washington. Check us out at wsj.com/podcasts and become a subscriber on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and the Google Play Music app.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
Welcome back to Heard on the Street, the podcast. I'm Miriam Gottfried here with Alex Frangos and Steve Russolillo. So, Steve, we've had a lot of retail earnings this week, but two that you've written about, which were interesting to me, were Target and Costco. Target shares are down 28% over the past year, and they fell more than 12% on Tuesday after the company reported earnings. That's a huge move for a company like Target. It's a pretty stable company, typically. Meanwhile, Costco shares are up 16% over the past year, and it reports earnings later today, and you were much more bullish on Costco. It seems like both of these retailers compete with Amazon, so why do you think Costco is doing so much better than Target?
Well, what's really interesting about Costco right now is just looking at its moves since the election. So the stock is up more than 20% since then, which is kind of surprising because when you look at retail in general, the sector has been one of the underperformers. A lot of worries about the border adjustment tax and just in general what is happening in the retail industry at this point. And so, you know, when you look specifically at Costco, they've actually seen same-store sales improve in the past few months, which is a turn from over the past 18 months or so before the election. They were having trouble getting people come to their stores. But now that is starting to improve. Store traffic is up. This is also part of Costco recently switched their credit card providers now. So now the Costco membership card is sponsored by Visa as opposed to Amex. That's also a key move there that potentially is drawing in a larger customer base to pay for their stuff. And then ultimately, Costco is a membership business. You spend a certain amount per year to be a Costco member, and then you can go to their warehouses and you can buy in bulk as much as you want, whatever you want. And it's a strategy that has worked for a long time now for Costco.
And that membership fee just flows straight to the bottom line. It's pure profit for them, right?
Pure profit for Costco. It's why something like Amazon Prime is so popular is why Amazon is pushing Prime so much, because those membership fees are just straight profit for them.
But not for Amazon. Because I want to point out that a lot of people conflate the Amazon Prime membership with the Costco membership, thinking, oh, at Costco it flows straight to the bottom line. Amazon Prime flows straight to the bottom line.
Delivery.
Not
fees,
the case.
Right?
Yeah. You have shipping. You have shipping, which is a huge cost. And when you are an Amazon Prime member, you're paying whatever, your $100 a year. And a lot of times you're spending more that you're costing them more than $100 in shipping costs a year.
That's an excellent point. And that's, yeah, we can't forget that because Costco, essentially you're your own delivery worker there.
Costco is the warehouse.
Right, right.
And all you do, and they do is put stuff up with like forklifts, right?
Right.
And then you as the customer come and take it out of the warehouse. It's pretty impressive as a business.
No, so that's an absolutely a fantastic point. And so certainly can't be understated. So, you know, with Costco, so we've seen now that they really have started to gain momentum, regain momentum over the past few months. That has certainly been reflected in the stock. The opposite could be said for Target, as you mentioned. And so what we've seen in general with department store operators and what we've seen with big retailers and Target included in this is just fewer people are going to actual stores and buying stuff. And e-commerce, while it's increasing and gaining steam, it's not doing enough to overtake all those declines in actual store traffic. And so Target has been hit hard by this. They announced this new multi-year plan to invest more in their stores, to try to lower prices, to try to make their stores better and nicer and whatnot. But they said 2017 is going to be a year of investment. And
which investors never like to hear.
No one ever likes to hear that. Absolutely not. And so the stock has really been hit very hard. You've seen, and what's also, and Miriam and Alex, I'd love to get your takes on this as well, but you've seen now Macy's is closing stores. JCPenney just announced that they're closing stores. Do we need to see more of that across the retail spectrum?
Well, I think we need to see more store closures, but I don't know that that is Target's problem. I think Target has a really interesting situation in that, you know, like Walmart, it sells a huge breadth of products, almost as many SKUs probably as Amazon itself sells, you know, which means that it competes really directly with Amazon. Costco, on the other hand, has many fewer SKUs, many fewer items that it actually sells. And for Target, that's a problem because it means that either they compete on price with Amazon, which Walmart has done, and you can see that because Walmart's margins have actually fallen, their operating margins have fallen, or you can try to differentiate yourself and you can say, oh, well, we have these brands that are only available here. And that's what Target's tried to do. And if you look at it, it's really interesting. Target's sales have fallen, but their margins have held up. So if you're one of these companies, it seems like you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Either your sales fall or your margins fall. And Target itself said all this investment we're going to be doing is basically investing in lower margins because they're going to be investing in online sales, which amount to lower margins.
So is it the right move?
I don't know. I really think these companies are in a bad spot strategically. I do.
So what is Costco doing right then? Is it because it sells gas and more fresh food than Target and it's in such big quantities that no one would ever dream of ordering, you know, 50,000 pounds of sugar from Amazon, so they don't really compete there? But, you know, what is it that, you know, they're managing their way out of this situation?
Yeah, I think Costco does sell a lot of, I mean, there is plenty of stuff that it sells that also sells at Amazon, but Costco already has really low prices. So that's one thing that's to its advantage. And if you stripped away those really premium fees that people pay to be Costco members, you get pretty low margins at Costco already, like much lower than, you know, Walmart or Target.
Mm-hmm.
So Costco's able to basically, you know, run with those really low margins because of its membership fees. And I think that allows it to compete on price with Amazon and still be perceived as a really great value for consumers.
And Alex, you also mentioned gas sales. Costco is one of the biggest gasoline providers in the country here. So, yeah, that is also a huge part of it. And, you know, just getting a sense from people, like, people really like the experience of going to Costco.
They
like,
do.
They love, you know, there is excellent customer service there.
There's free samples,
exactly.
You can eat lunch from the free samples.
Which people always talk about. And so it's just people talk, and this is kind of a lost art, I would say, in this day and age. Like, it's people actually really like going there, and it's a good
experience.
Which
is funny because it's just a warehouse. It's
exactly.
Not like, you know, here you have Target investing in sprucing up its stores, but you know, Costco has managed to get people to enjoy going to, like, literally a bare-bones warehouse.
But that's what people used to say about Target and how refreshing it was and how design-oriented it was
yeah.
in terms of the products, and that it was so different from
yeah.
Walmart, and you'd get, you know, a higher demographic, you know, socio-economic demographic going to a Target. You know, someone who also shopped at Nordstrom was shopping at Target.
That's right,
and,
yeah.
And
Target,
like,
people
call
it.
Target, right. And it seems like that kind of mojo has gone away, and Amazon is probably a big part of that. Target also probably had to invest in stores in terms of location. You know, Costco, you often have to drive behind the back of a parking lot to get to the Costco. And so they're, you know, it, that cheapness, part of their culture is protecting them.
Yeah, I mean, that could be true. And it may be some of the same consumers who are shopping at Costco and Target. But Target just has lost some of its distinction or, like, reason to go, I think. But, I mean, it's a really interesting question. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the strategic divide between these two retailers.
Love tech? Dig gadgets? Then make Tech News Briefing from the Wall Street Journal a part of your day. WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Stay ahead of the headlines. Stay on top of the markets. This is Heard on the Street from the Wall Street Journal.
So, Steve, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do you think Target shares will be lower or higher 1 year from now? And what about Costco?
Oh, man. You are putting me on the spot.
Do you think this turnaround effort of theirs is going to bear fruit?
Target will be lower. I think that even if it does bear fruit, it's just a really tough environment in general for retailers. And I think that you've already seen a big drop in a lot of their share prices. But I think the sector as a whole probably still has a little bit more downside to go. And I don't know that Target's going to be able to show a really fast improvement to get the
mm-hmm.
market to change its mind. So I'll say Target will be lower. A year from now, I'd like to think Costco will be higher. The only thing that's holding me back a little bit is that the stock has had such a huge move here in the past 3 months.
Pretty high valuation for a retailer.
And it's very, it's valued at about almost 30 times forward earnings, projected earnings over the next 12 months, which Costco has always had at a premium multiple, but this is now getting really rich. So I still like Costco a lot. I still think it'll be up, but I don't think maybe it'll underperform the overall market, but
mm-hmm.
I think it'll be up 12 months from now.
That's interesting. I mean, I think one thing that's kind of happened to these few companies that have shown themselves to be Amazon proof, quote unquote, is everybody sort of piled into them, and they have gotten higher multiples as a result of it. So I wonder if that will continue to happen, if, you know, the multiples will continue to expand for the few companies that have shown some defensiveness against
them. Well, one that you've written about, Best Buy, had earnings this week, which actually we didn't even talk about. But the stock was down a little bit, I think about 4% or so after the earnings. But not necessarily that the company is doing terribly. It's just I think that, you know, investors were just
a lot of optimism for them. Yeah.
Maybe a little too much optimism was baked in, even though they are doing pretty well as being, quote unquote, Amazon proof.
We are going to have to end it there. That wraps things up for this week's Heard on the Street podcast. Please join us every week for the latest in global investing. For more, please check us out at wsj.com/heard. That's wsj.com/heard. You can also email us with your comments, suggestions, or questions at heardpodcast@wsj.com. From New York, I'm Miriam Gottfried. On behalf of the rest of the Heard on the Street team, thanks for listening.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.